a year. Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pierre LaFon Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of your academic programs that you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And by the way, speaking of Habitat for Humanity, they're having their Playhouse Build-A-Thon on Saturday, August 5th at St. Joseph's Church in Carpinteria from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Teams can sign up to fundraise for Habitat and actually build playhouses that will be donated to a local not-for-profit. If you're interested in participating, you can call Jessica Lucas at 805-692-2226. And welcome, everyone. And we're here with Monique Lamone, the Assistant Majority Whip of the California State Assembly. Good afternoon, Monique.
Good afternoon, Neil. It's great to be here with you.
So the last time you were here, you were not the majority whip. I'm very impressed. You've really moved in the last year. You've really become so important that I'm so glad you came.
Well, I'm honored to be here. And you're right. The last time I was here, I was a school board member.
I know.
And now I'm in the state assembly.
So I remember back in the late 60s, I'm giving away my age, I was elected after running a campaign to be president of my fraternity. And I remember after the election saying, I will never run for office again, because it was awful to be in a situation where you had to be nice to everybody. And, which I've said before, my favorite politician of the state of California. And I don't know, how do you do it? How do you get up in the morning and say, okay, I'm going to go be nice to everybody and fight with the other side?
That's a great question. And I'm glad to hear that I'm amongst your favorites. I have a feeling you might have a couple other favorites
salute,
too.
There you go.
There you go. But, you know, I think actually a lot of my background is part of why, my personal background is why I do the work I do. When I think of the fact that I get to wake up every morning and do a job that I chose, a job that I can get some meaningful work done. It's important to me. And sure, there's the other side of it, which is not the fun stuff. But I come from a background where my parents were immigrants, and they didn't always have a choice in the jobs that they had. And they didn't go to college, and so jobs were given to them without that. And that's something that I remind myself every day, that I choose the job that that I'm in, and that's powerful.
You know, the difference, and this is why, you know, we're so lucky to have someone like you. When I look at the news today, I just throw up my hands and say, I can't believe it, and I go on with my day. You have to throw up your arms and say you can't believe it and try and do something about it. So that's really so wonderful that you are actually willing to dedicate your life to making change. So, speaking of making change, are now one of many women that are making an impact. Is that a fight that you think is high on your agenda? Not just the fight for, we'll talk about policy, but the idea of having more women in a position of a political success?
Oh, absolutely. Although, we here in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties, we have several elected women. In the state legislature, we're still under 25%. Of members are women. And so I, especially coming from a school board where I would see a lot of women that were elected to a school board going to the state level, I now see a huge difference. We're really the minority. So there absolutely is a commitment on my part to do whatever we can to create pathways for women to be in leadership position, whether it's for a nonprofit, whether it's for a business, or at the state level in politics.
The healthcare debacle. Everyone was talking about how wonderful McCain was, but it really was two women Republicans that really stepped up, and one in particular who was able to withstand the pressure from the president. So, I think that not only is it a good idea to have women in principle, but it's actually they have more guts than men.
Well, there you have it. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. Two women who held strong on their convictions, their thoughts about how they were going to best represent the community, independent of all the pressure and influence. And I think you're right. And I was glad to see that those two women stuck strong. And I know that, you know, some people were saying, oh, it was, you know, McCain or others. But of course, a vote happens and we all count numbers. And every single one of those numbers is important. But I was glad to see that foundation was two women.
And they weren't as theatrical as McCain was with his thumb. So that was probably one of the other reasons. So you're the assistant majority whip.
I am.
What is a whip?
What is a whip? So I get asked this question. Having my education background, I always relate it to a school setting. So I say, well, it's kind of like I'm part of student government. We have the state assembly. There's 80 of us. And I get to be part of the leadership team. And as an assistant majority whip, my role is really to get to know all 79 other members and to get to know what's important for them, what are the issues that they care a lot about, so that when we have some really complicated votes that come up, that I understand what is going to be of concern to them, what will drive them, so that we can try to identify how to best craft a bill. I think sometimes people, especially in these days, related to House of Cards, and they start asking me, like, wait, so who were you and which, you know, character were you? And I'm like, well, it's not that way. There's still a lot of getting to know people and relationship building, understanding people and why they serve the district they serve, and what are the unique aspects of that particular district. So I work a lot with other members.
Now, how did you get that job being a freshman?
Well, and that's a great question. How did I get that role being a freshman? I met the Speaker of the Assembly, Anthony Rendon, very early on when I started running, and he and I shared conversations and also interest in policy. So I think he got to see my work. And through my campaign, they followed just who I was as a candidate, what I did, how I reached out. They looked at your numbers as far as how many people you were able to gather support from, how many votes you got, all of that good stuff. And so when it came time for him to put a leadership team together, he thought of me, and I was really honored when I got the phone call in December. I got a phone call if that was something that I was willing to consider being part of his leadership team. I said, absolutely. So I'm part of a small group of us in the state assembly. There's only about six of us, and there's only two of us that are women.
And I think it's going to be important when you become governor to be able to have a relationship with all of the other assembly members.
Well, I think it's important now.
Oh,
I think
now
it's
too.
Important
okay.
Now.
All right.
Well, and it's, you know, I start to learn a lot about there's not all 80 assembly districts are the same, so I get to know a lot about these other assembly districts and, again, what drives them. What are the big motivators?
Of course, looking at an assembly district, you need to have a scorecard to figure out where the lines are drawn. Your district goes from here to Kansas City, Missouri. Is that how it works?
It's something like that, yeah. It's about a nice, solid 90-mile stretch. And so I go all the way from Santa Ynez, Solvang, Buellton, that's the northern end, all the way down to Ventura County, Santa Paula, Fillmore, Piru. And it's a stretch along our beautiful central coast. Yeah.
So you get to travel a lot.
I do.
And you get to go to Sacramento.
I do. I go to Sacramento every week. I go up on Monday, come back Thursday.
Is there a Club Med in Sacramento?
No. We do have air conditioning. We share that with Club Med. There's air conditioning there.
So you are a freshman who has gotten a leadership position. And one of the things that I think that's great is you have an intern who you're giving that opportunity to. Gabby is a Yale undergraduate who is going to learn all about politics from you.
Absolutely. I think that that's part of what we get to do, right? We talked about creating pathways, and Gabby's here, who is an intern in our office, learning really what it's like to do the policy end and how the policy sometimes bridges with the politics side of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so you're going to tell us in the next segment everything that we should know about changing policy to make it a better world?
Okay.
Okay. That's simple.
She's learned it all in the summer.
Okay, so yeah. don't stay tuned, because we have some really important things to talk about in the next segment. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Monique Lamon, the Assistant Majority Whip of the California State Assembly for District 37. Let's step back a minute. And you were born in somewhere in District 37?
I was born and raised actually in Santa Barbara. My parents are from Mexico, and I was born on the west side, and so I spent a little bit of my earlier years on the west side of Santa Barbara and then the east side of Santa Barbara.
And you went to high school here?
I did. I am a Don.
I'm a Don.
Santa Barbara High School Don.
Okay.
But I love all of the high schools in our district, Neil.
I would hope so. You went on to Berkeley.
I did.
I didn't know anyone got into Berkeley.
Yeah.
I thought it was really a hard school to get into.
Yeah, that's the beautiful part about it is that, it is a hard school to get into, but that I didn't understand how hard it was, so I didn't automatically choose to not apply because it was so difficult. There was a little bit of like, look, this is a great school. I'd love to go there. Worked really hard, and I thought it was possible, so I applied, and I got in.
And what did you major in?
I majored in sociology with a minor in education.
And you went to Columbia, where my wife got her master's degree also. What did you get your master's
in? I got my master's at Columbia in education at Teachers College.
Wow.
So I stuck with this. Education was really the game changer for me, and I stuck with education. And that, interestingly enough, is kind of what led my work into policy.
Well, now more than ever, we need educators in politics because we need to educate our populace. De Tocqueville said in the 1870s when he was visiting and writing, he said that the problem with American democracy is that if you don't have an educated electorate, you're going to run into problems. And this is, when the whole world was changing over from monarchies and dictatorships to democracy. And that is the problem with democracy. So education is important. So when you got your master's, what did you decide to do? Become a teacher?
So I actually came back to Santa Barbara after living in New York and going to Columbia, and I worked at UCSB, and I spent the last 11 or so years working out at UCSB, working with graduate students and undergrads who wanted to pursue an advanced degree, a master's or a PhD. And so my job was to help create pathways, a lot of times research pathways, for those students to be able to do that.
If you went to Columbia, which is in New York, how come you don't have the same accent that I do?
I don't know, Neil. I don't know that I spent enough time in New York.
Okay. You got to spend more time
there.
Then we can really have a conversation.
Then we can really have a conversation. We could probably talk about food and some of my favorite spots to eat in New York and some of the things I really enjoyed to do in New York.
So you then decided with all of these wonderful degrees to work in the public sector, which was the UCSB experience, and you decided to stay there by volunteering, I guess is the best, for another full-time job, which is the school board. That's a full-time job and you don't get paid for it.
Right. So I did. In 2010, I ran for the school board for Santa Barbara Unified School District. I was elected. I served 6 years before going to the state assembly. And a lot of, you know, my reason for running for the school board was really my involvement with schools and with the community. I was very involved. I served on nonprofit boards, and I thought, goodness gracious, this is one area where I could provide, you know, some thought, some information about how things are working for our students, whether it's for our K-12 students or our higher ed students. There's a bridge there. And I ran, and I was successful and spent 6 years on the school board.
You know, we had both the old and the new superintendent of schools on in the last year, and both of them had the same response to the question I asked about what's your most important priority. And it's really a surprising issue, given what I, from the outside, my kids were grown before I moved here, that there needs to be more of an acceptance of everybody in the schools. You know, when you're looking at it from the outside, it looks like, you know, glee in Santa Barbara High.
Yeah.
But it's not. And there needs to be, both from the parent standpoint and the student standpoint, acceptance of everybody. And that, I guess, is something you were working on.
Absolutely. And my work, whether it's been in higher ed or through the K-12 system, has been, well, what do we do to make our school pathways for success inclusive of all students, students who have special needs, students who are underrepresented, first in their family to go to college, students who are, you know, exceptionally, you know, excelling in school. And so that's been something that I've been very committed to, and I still continue to be committed to that at the State Assembly. But that is some of my background and my expertise.
One of the most surprising things to me was I had about a year and a half ago these two kids on, young girls who were juniors or seniors at Santa Barbara High, and they identified as lesbian. And I said, well, you're lucky you go to a school that really is fully accepting. And they said, what are you talking about? We get bullied all the time. I said, what are you bullied about? And one of them, who was beautiful, said, I get bullied because no one believes I'm a lesbian, and they think I'm doing it just to get attention. And it's just like, that's the kind of thing you don't think about would happen in a place like Santa Barbara. So there's still challenges here.
There are absolutely still challenges in all communities, and especially now that I see it from the state lens. I mean, every community has challenges. We all have flaws and imperfections. And we, I think, in all communities have a long way to go to fully embrace all the differences and understand what that means and how we help all students be successful in schools.
And how can, now that you're in the state government, how can the state help local communities like Santa Barbara fulfill their responsibilities?
So there, I think it's twofold from the state perspective. I think sometimes from the state perspective is really kind of putting milestones in place for schools. Like, what does it mean for schools to be successful? Does it mean that everyone gets a high school degree, or does it mean that everyone has a chance to apply to college? But I also think that it's in terms of funding. I serve on the budget committee that oversees all of pre-K through higher ed education funding, which is about 40% of California's budget. And we, you know, that is really important as well, because in order to reach some of these milestones, we have to look at how the funding is being used, and also acknowledge that in some cases, to gain success is going to take a different level of intervention than in other cases. And so we have to think about funding in that way as well. So I think it's twofold, from the policy side, from the milestone side, from the financial side, and then also work with the local school district to say, well, what works in your school district that's going to be different than a school district in Kern County, and learn from that.
So when you your first day at work, do they let you suggest things that you would not only be interested in but are competent at? Or it's like the Army, you're a doctor, start peeling potatoes?
No, it was actually a little bit. So the Speaker of the Assembly makes a determination as to what committees you're going to serve on. We are able to request what committees we'd like to serve on. Mm-hmm. And the Budget Sub 2 was one that I really wanted to serve on, particularly because it touches two of my big interests, which is the K-12 system and also the higher ed system. And policy-wise, they're actually split up if you just deal with them as far as policy, not just fiscal committees. And so I made the request and was successful in having the speaker appoint me to that committee.
What's the McNair Scholars Program?
The McNair Scholars Program, interesting you ask, because it's a federal program. It's part of the TRIO grants that regrettably are being jeopardized right now under this this new administration, and they are a series of programs that help students who are first in their family to go to college and who come from working class families be successful at the next level. So there's some high school programs that help students get into college, and some college programs like the McNair Scholars Program that help students get into master's and PhDs. And so I worked with a select group of students who were high achieving, first in their families to go to college, who had the goal of pursuing a PhD, and my job was to help them get to that PhD.
And are you still doing that type of mentoring work on the side?
Well, you know, I don't do as much of that mentoring work. I think that one of the things that I've wanted to do, so having interns is actually not a requirement of the job or of the office. And so something I've wanted to do is try to find ways for people who have this policy interest to be in the office to get that experience. So I don't do the same level of mentoring that I did before, which was really one-on-one. I spent, you know, 40 hours a week working with students and their families and mentoring and guiding. But now I just make sure that I have a pathway available.
And Gabby, you're the beneficiary now. Instead of having Monique do 400 kids, you're only the one, only you. You must be really wonderful. You must be so competent now.
Well, there are three other interns.
Oh, okay. So, I take that back.
In the Santa Barbara office alone.
In the Ventura office, yeah.
I guess that whole assessment went down the drain.
So is it besides the fun of working in politics as a college student, are you learning things?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I came into Monique's office knowing that I was vaguely interested in politics and sort of keeping track of things at a national level, but I hadn't really gotten very involved locally or about our district or in California. And I didn't really know which area of policy I thought I would be interested in or I wanted to pursue more. But just being around the office, I've sort of gotten to just explore a little bit of everything. And when I get one project that I think is really exciting, I get to really dive into it and sort of get a little preview of what it would be like to actually work in the policy realm in that particular area.
So what's your most favorite policy area that you've been able to take a look at?
So far, it's been environmental policy. I've been working on a few different projects for Monique, and I didn't think that would be my favorite interest coming into it, but I think especially living in Connecticut for 9 months and then coming back and realizing how much we have to protect in Santa Barbara made me want to get more involved with conservation and environmental protection efforts, especially in light of what's going on nationally.
Yeah, but I don't understand why you need to do that. Pruitt, the Environmental Protection Agency, said there is no global warming. So why do you need to do it? It's all good.
Well, he got me there. I guess I just should give up now.
Yeah, on that note, we'll just take a break. This is AHA Presents About Education. You're listening to Santa Barbara News Press Radio. We'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear from humble beginnings in 1973. Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Monique Lamon, the Assistant Majority Whip for the California State Assembly. And we're talking about all kinds of things. We're trying to solve the world's problems, which we only have a half an hour left, so we better speak quickly.
Yeah, we better solve them fast.
Before you went to Sacramento, you were the Commissioner for the Santa Barbara County Commission for Women.
Right.
And tell us about that.
Yeah. So back then, Supervisor Saluth Carbajal appointed me. I was in his district, and he appointed me to the Santa Barbara County Commission for Women. And it was my first appointed position, my first kind of leadership position. And that was, I think, in the early 2000s or so, where I served on that commission. And it was an important one because we got to come together as a county to really discuss what resources were available, what issues were pertinent to women in Santa Barbara County. And I got to meet some great people, but we also got to do some great work as far as the commission's concerned.
So you also hike.
I do.
But you also hike with not only your dog, but you have a thing called Hikes with Monica.
Yeah,
with Monique.
With Monique. Yeah, I do. So I thought about the fact that we want to be accessible as an elected official. We want to be accessible to people who we represent and the people we serve. And I thought, why not go on a hike together and just ask questions? It's more casual. We're outdoors. It's not your typical office setting. We still do the office meetings or the coffee with, you know, the assembly member. But it's this was a little bit different. And I have to tell you, it was so successful that we've done one in Santa Barbara County, one in Ventura County, and we're going to continue to do them because we're getting asked about them. When are we going to do these hikes? We had a lot of groups reach out to us. Will you come hike in our on our trail? And so it's been really neat. And the first one we did in Santa Barbara, it was, I mean, just a wide group of people, students from an elementary school to, you know, folks who were much older. It was really incredible to see the folks that came out to hike and ask a lot of good questions.
AHA does a hike every year.
Yes.
And I don't want to compete with hikes.
Oh, but I think you're about to put me on spot to compete with here and sign up for that. That's what I mean.
But because Deckers is one of our sponsors, you get a pair of Deckers hiking boots if you participate.
There you go.
So this is a really good thing to do. And it's in, I think it's in October or November.
Okay.
Year.
All right. So Neil's putting me on the spot, and I definitely will take on the challenge, and we'll look to see if we can make that date work, and we'll hike. I mean, this is good to get out.
Okay, great. Yeah. So the other thing that I found interesting is you have a thing called Cash for College. So this is, I assume, is you pay for people's college, right?
I wish.
This is a good way to get votes. No, that's not the case?
That's not the case.
Oh, okay.
Not the case. But I do wish that Cash for College was that. But, you know, the interesting thing about Cash for College is that it is a state initiative. But it's a state initiative that I've been involved with since the early 2000s, since before I worked at UCSB, when I worked for Santa Barbara City College in a program called CalSOAP, the California Student Opportunity Access Program. It's a program where we go out to the community and we give community members information about how to pay for college. And you'd be surprised the number of people that come. It's not just for people who think that they're going to qualify for financial aid, but it's really to say, look, here are all your options available. We've partnered with the Scholarship Foundation of Santa Barbara. We've partnered with many other groups as far as making sure that information gets out. Now, I used to run these workshops and give the informations and do the PowerPoints. Now, really, from the state level, I just support them. I make sure that our community knows that these are happening. And there's great individuals from our colleges and also from our nonprofit world who are involved in providing that information.
There's a a concern amongst economists that have looked at where debt is now among younger people, and a very high proportion of debt is now paying off college loans. And so you have kids, even those that are successfully employed, that have really high loan payments. And, you know, it does not get discharged in bankruptcy. So it follows you for your whole life. I know you're involved in a thing called Degrees Not Debt scholarships.
Right.
What, this is a way to avoid that trap,
right? And so the Degrees Not Debt is an initiative that came out of the State Assembly this year, and it was really to address exactly what you've touched on, which is the fact that our college students, which is, you know, our future workforce, is coming out of college with so much debt that their ability to contribute at the same economic level is just not going to be there. And that's a concern to us. So what we did as a state assembly, we got together and said, well, what are the elements that would be needed to address some of these issues? And so one was, you know, increasing the amount of financial aid that's provided by the state. The second was to ensure that our students also had what we call non-tuition financial support, which is the support to eat, to basically get some of the basic necessities that's not covered by the tuition and books and so forth. And the other one was also really the broader concept of how do we create in California a higher education system that does not require students to come out with so much debt. And this initiative is ongoing. We were able to get some funding for some of the pieces related to the non-tuition scholarships for students. We were able to get an increase in funding for the middle class scholarship, which is part of this. But we are still working on really the bigger picture of how do we help students not have as much debt. This initiative is something that's going to continue. I jumped on. I was, I think, the only freshman that got invited to be part of this little group of folks that were leading this initiative. But it has to do with also my background and expertise and saying, look, I've been working directly with students for more than 14 years. I can tell you what hunger looks like. I can tell you what it means for a student to say, I can't compromise, you know, shifting my work hours to take this exam because I need that money to pay for tuition.
So in 1960, California higher education opportunity was probably the best in the world. And there's an international study that takes place every 2 years that ranks higher education. Actually, it ranks all education. And last year, I think we came out, you know, number 35. And one of the problems, I guess, with the education system in California was Proposition 13. So there was a structural change that took probably one of the best things about America, the California's free school system, and at best marginalized it. Just thinking really big, you know, other than, you know, just scholarships and reducing debt, is there any way to bring California back?
Well, we're trying. I mean, we've had so many conversations about what the level of investment would need to be, and if that investment is just a fiscal investment or if it's also a policy investment. So some of the initiatives that we've seen, and we can think about, for example, the middle class scholarship. We can think about the fact that we're also doing more interventions. We know now more about how much interventions we need for students with special needs. We're trying to identify, do we fix it with the fiscal part or the policy? I think there's a relationship between the two, first of all. I want to be very clear that there is a relationship with the level of investment on the fiscal side and the policy side. But we, you know, in California are still trying to do that. We've made some decisions. You know, these are ballot measures that the state has made. And so I know that you have some locals working on some of the Degrees Not Debt initiatives here.
So there's two elements, I think. One is money, and the other is how can you learn anything, even if someone pays for education, if you don't have food, you know, if you don't have protein, you can't. And this goes from, you know, K1 to K12 or even before K1. Hunger is not only a human problem, but it's also an educational problem.
It is.
So what are you doing? What are we doing? What should we be doing about the crisis of hunger and the fact that there are people that just, you know, can't afford lunches?
Yeah.
At best.
And that, I mean, that's a big issue. This is something also we've had federal funding in the that we've partnered with in the state to be able to provide free meals for students who are hungry, and that's also being jeopardized at the moment. And the reason that this is important is because we can make an unbelievable investments in our future workforce through education, through training. But what we know about a human, what we know about a child is if he or she is not hungry, they cannot learn. They really can't. So we have to be able to make sure that someone is healthy in the classroom, because that's where we're going to actually get the biggest yield in terms of our investment. And so that's been something that's been very important. I had to really think about that as a school board member. We have, you know, the free lunch programs, the No Child Will Go Hungry in the summer initiatives. And now in the state assembly, that was actually one of my very first bills that I passed.
In California, if you are getting a free lunch because you are whatever the poverty line is, mm-hmm. are you stigmatized or is it done in a way that no one knows? I've read somewhere that that's an issue.
That is an issue. We are working to destigmatize that. And so some of the things that have been done locally have been, for example, to use a swipe card where you're not paying with a pink ticket. Like when I was in school, there was a pink ticket that you would give. Now you have a swipe card and everybody puts money on it and you can buy food anyway. And no one knows where you got that, you know, the resources for the card. So that's one way that we're dealing with it. But it still happens. And I actually see it happen mostly at the high school level, to be honest with you. I think the junior high and high school levels where I see it more, the kids who go off campus versus the kids who stay on campus to eat. And so we're trying to address that. We're not quite there yet.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafon's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafon and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers. In the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Monique Lamone, who is the state assemblywoman for District number 37. And so I have a question for you that's going to sound a little bit fantastical. Is that a word, fantastical? Mm-hmm. You know, everything you said makes so much sense to me. What's the other side thinking about? Like, who would go against helping kids pay for college? Who would go against giving food to kids? Who would go against giving women every opportunity? Who would go against providing opportunities for first-generation kids? What is there to argue about? I mean, it's like one of the things that this society has is we don't understand the other side. I don't understand how the other side cannot mm-hmm. understand us.
Right. Well, I hear what you're saying, and it's not a question that I have not asked myself. I mean, I've definitely asked myself that same question. But I think also one of the things that this position and other positions have allowed us actually to sit down with the other side. And what I have found is that, you know, there's extremes on both ends. That's always going to be the case. But when we really sit down to talk with the other side, we also learn that the other side wants the same thing, but they don't want it done in the same way. The other side wants a healthy economy, wants, you know, folks to be successful, clean air, clean water, but they don't want it done in the same way, and they don't believe in the same things. And so I think that that's where it comes down to. I do think that in California, the relationship between the two, you know, big sides, which are the Democrats and Republicans, is not the same as it is at the national level. I think there are conversations. You will see that bills get out with votes from both sides. And sure, there's some bills that don't get out with votes from, you know, the opposite side. But they're really, most of the time, there are bills that get out from both sides. And I think for me, the reason that it's important for me to listen to folks is also so that I'm able to articulate my position better, why it's important to make these investments for students who are first in their family to go to college. And I've learned to argue both the policy side and the fiscal side of it. That's the truth, right? That someone, I might not get them on the policy side. They may not agree with me, but if I could actually demonstrate why this is good for the community and what the gains are, not just the moral, the good gains, but also there's greater gains that our community has, I'm able to make a different case for someone who may not have listened to the fact that, look, I just, bottom line, I think people should all have a chance to go to college if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I'm glad you're the assembly person rather than me, because I have a tough time listening to the other side. But we won't get into that. So tell us about Dreamers. Is your family, were you first generation?
I was first generation. I was born here in Santa Barbara.
But yes, you were first to go to college?
So I was the first in my family to go to college, yes. And my parents were born in Mexico.
So you look at the new policy. Is it just mean spirited? And is there anything the other side has that we could talk about that makes any sense at all? It just seems just blatantly mean.
You know, Neil, you and I started this conversation, and I don't know if actually the radio caught it, but we were talking about the Statue of Liberty and, you know, and the message around, you know, give me your poor, give me your needy, and what that means, and really that being at the core of American values of who the United States is. And so for me, the issue related to immigration, to Dreamers, particularly to Dreamers, is really about that. These are students in our communities who have been here, who know these communities as being their communities, being part of our communities. And so the idea that we wouldn't continue making the same level of investment to help them be successful when they have been part of our community is an idea that doesn't, you know, sit well with me. And that's why I do the work that I do in the state assembly and in the local community, say that we are going to support our Dreamers, that our Dreamers are part of our communities. We've acknowledged, we've accepted them as part of our communities, and making the investment in them to be able to go to college is something that has a direct impact on our economy. It has a direct impact on our community. And that's definitely not one where, you know, I think given my experience working with hundreds of students here, you know, I take that with me very seriously. I take that that's an important thing to do. And, you know, I can't comment on why the other side doesn't see the facts the way that I see them.
Well, I don't know whether you can learn empathy. But if you looked at some of our AHA kids that go to school afraid that they're going to come home and their parents won't be home, it makes you really wonder how people can't have compassion and empathy, and whether they can learn it if they were able to really understand what this policy is doing. But you know what? Let's not take the tough stuff. Let's go to a really easy thing to solve, because we want to end on a high note. Healthcare. So you said that you had the solution for health care, which is great. We have Senator McConnell on the phone, and he really wants to hear from you.
Well, and health care is.
Why is your thumb pointing down?
Yeah, no, my thumb is holding on tightly to the earphones that I have at this moment. But you know, this is actually a very important issue. It's not just an important issue that we've known about for years, but I think it's very timely. There is really an energy around what is it that we're going to do around healthcare. And particularly because the fact that healthcare has been threatened at the national level to the degree that it's been threatened, it's become a California issue. And we had a bill this year that came forward that's still alive. It's a bill that's still in the works, but it's probably not going to, we're not going to see it to fruition this year, around single payer. And I think that that was clear message that, you know, California is trying to identify what the best way is to move forward. And this is, a very complicated one. As I watch what's happening at the national level, you know, there's takeaways about not gutting a system without having something in place, not gutting a system without knowing what the fiscal impact is going to be. And first of all, not gutting a system that's in place without understanding what the human impact is going to be. And I think that that's very, very important, that this is something that in terms of my values, do I believe in a system that we would create, that we would support, that helps our community, helps all members of our community? Absolutely. But it's a hard question to identify how we do that. And we would also, especially as a state, we're tied to some of the federal systems now. So we're watching what's happening at the federal level and paying a lot of attention to it here in California, because it will absolutely impact millions of Californians.
But the governor said a few months ago, or did I misunderstand him, that if they were to eliminate the Medicaid support that we get, he'll do it on his own, that we would have our own Obamacare or Brown Care. Is that possible?
Well, it's not easily possible, but I think, we are California, and so we've also made a lot of things that were never possible. I mean, this is where Silicon Valley was created. We didn't think that some of the technology innovations we've ever seen, we couldn't have imagined that. And so I think that what California has made a commitment to do, and I think what our governor is saying, is that we're not going to just let people in California be without thinking critically and hard and making some very difficult decisions about what we do to ensure that in California people have access to healthcare. That's important. We've been one of the states that's been most active in taking advantage of what the new at the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, has had to offer with the new exchange program. And we've been active. We have, a great number of enrollees. And I think that that just speaks to the fact that that's important for this state.
What's amazing to me is the other side, quote unquote, talks about bankrupting a state or the federal government, but you can't bankrupt a state or the federal government if you raise taxes. And people don't want to hear about raising taxes, but the number that I believe would solve all of the country's problems, certainly California, would be to raise taxes an amount that would probably be apparent to a lot of very rich people. But for most people, they probably would accept it if they understood what it was used for, not simply to be wasted by the perception of what happened in the 70s. So I think that if the country really understood these issues about first-generation kids not having food, third-generation kids not having food, having our people who are over 55 not having any health care, who are not working for big companies, I think they would consider raising taxes I know this makes me sound like a real crazy liberal, but, it depends on what kind of world you want to live in. And when people who I know living near me would say, I don't want to pay any more taxes, I think about who is serving them food, sneezing in their sandwich because they can't afford to take a day off from work, and thinking that they don't live as part of the same universe. So if elected, I'm not running for office.
I think Neil, you bring up a really good point. It's like, what kind of a community, what kind of a world do we want to live in? We have to make some choices, and they're not easy choices. And the level of investment is one of those questions that we ask ourselves. What do we do? How do we invest? And I say invest because there's real outcomes tied to this money. Some people say spend, some people say waste, but it's if you can identify and really create any program, whether it's through education, healthcare system, enviro, you name it, where you see what the outcome is. We know that sometimes we don't immediately see the outcomes, but if we have some milestones in place, then we're really looking at an investment. But that's an important question that we ask ourselves in California and that we're committed to.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with the Monique Lamone.
It's been a long 50 minutes, right, Neil?
It's been a very long.
I thought it was going fast.
Assistant Majority Whip of the California State Assembly for District 37. What should we be aware of that's going on in the state? What legislative initiatives are going on that we probably don't pay enough attention to?
So we have a lot of initiatives. This has been a particularly busy year. Some of the bills that you've seen have been really a way to identify how we deal with the political moment we're at in this particular time. And some of the bills are really continue to do the work that California has always done. We only have 4 legislative sessions left. So that means, I'm sorry, weeks. 4 legislative weeks left in this session that are left. And so what we're seeing now is a number of bills that have been introduced but that are kind of in their final stages. We're either going to agree to them or we're not. We have bills on all areas. I mean, really the environment, on health, on education. Some of the things that have stood out, I think, for people have been some of the work that we're doing around climate, some of our resolutions, some of our support. We recently passed a big what was called cap and trade that kind of came out of the assembly. We had a huge transportation bill that came out this year, which was an investment in infrastructure for our roads, because we understand that that's how people get to access to healthcare, that's how people get to school, and that's how people get to work. And what we anticipate is that when I go back in August, we're going to also talk about housing and the fact that housing is a very complicated issue, that there's limited housing and that's particularly expensive in the state.
Well, I didn't bring up housing because I know it's a simple issue for you.
Like all of them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's Gabby can tell us. The idea is you move back with your parents, right? Is that the solution for young kids today?
Yeah, but don't tell my parents that.
Yeah, right.
They're not aware yet.
Yeah. What's your next step? What's your next political – what's on the horizon for you?
So on the horizon is this is a 2-year term. So I'm ready to do it again in 2018 and to be committed to this. And so I think we'll see where that takes us. But it's been the first 8 months have been very busy. They've been very active 8 months. And so I look forward to finishing out my first 2-year term and getting ready to do it again for 2018.
Thank you, Monique. Thank you for being here. And thank you, Monique Lamone, for everything you do. You're a terrific representative, and I can't wait until you're governor. you've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. We'll be back here next week at the same time.
It's 3.